Islamic Finance News, the world's leading Islamic finance news provider, this is IFN Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of IFN Podcast. My name is Vinita Tan, the managing editor of IFN, and it is indeed a pleasure to be hosting today's show. At the start of this year, the AOFI Sharia Standard 59 on the sale of debt took full effect in several markets, including the UAE. The standard impacts both the banking and sukuk sectors, as it concerns the rollover debts, as well as tangibility ratios of assets. Now, these new sets of rules are seen by some as disrupting sukuk growth, but some also see this as the right step toward ensuring Sharia integrity of Islamic financial markets. Now, this is indeed a rather tricky issue. So to help us understand, entangle, and appreciate the nuances and impact of the standard to the Islamic finance market, Omar Mustafa Ansari, the Secretary General of the Accounting and Auditing Organization for Islamic Financial Institutions, better known as AOFI, joins us at the table. Hi Omar, thank you so much for joining us today. So we're going to talk about the AOFI Sharia Standard 59, which was fully implemented at the start of this year. You know, it has been described as game-changing by the industry. Some saw the new rule as restricting and hindering sukuk offering, yet you also have some who have hailed it as the right step towards standardization and for long-term sustainability of the sector. Could you start by explaining to us briefly what the standard is about and what was the rationale behind this standard?
Thank you very much. And first, I would like to thank you and the management of IFN team who have actually given us this opportunity for that. Actually, I'll just take you a little bit to the background first. So I have a few points that I would like to make before we actually can be able to actually comprehend this issue properly. So first thing is that I would say that Islamic finance is distinct from conventional. This is the starting point. At AOFI, when we do our standard setting part, this is the starting point for us that we don't do standards if conventional standards are acceptable to us. So in accounting, governance, other areas, whenever we believe that the conventional standards are good and providing a robust, resilient, sound mechanism for the operations of Islamic finance industry, we don't reinvent the wheel. We don't do standards in those areas. So we do our standards in the areas where Islamic finance is different and that has to be handled in a way which is in line with the Sharia. And for sure, Sharia standards are one of those areas. But even our other standards come from the same standpoint. So we need to understand this as a background that there are distinct features between Islamic and conventional finance which need to be taken into account while considering any of these sort of discussions. So we start with this point. That is very important. Second thing is we need to understand that Sharia is always there. It is there for centuries. It is actually the matter of understanding, clarifying, and interpreting Sharia. So it's not that we are bringing up some new rules. Rather, we are actually clarifying and interpreting some of the Sharia rules which are well already there. We are just clarifying them so that people can understand them and implement them better. Particularly, we do this in those areas where we feel that the Sharia rules are actually being misinterpreted or not clear enough, so people are misapplying them. We need to understand another point as a standard setting body that the standardization is about acceptance of majority. So it cannot happen that some people say that, okay, this thing is okay. But if that is not acceptable to the at a global level to the majority of the experts, the majority of scholars, we need to understand that we need to find uniformity. So while there can be individual views about some of the transactions or some of the structures, or some of the mechanisms, but while doing the standardization exercise, we need to evaluate all of them on merit and find the solution which is acceptable to all of it. So if there is for example, if there is a lenient rule by some scholars and a strict rule by some scholars, you can understand that the stricter rule will be acceptable to everybody. So if a structure is done on the basis of a stricter rule, it will be acceptable to all. While if the structure is done on the lenient rule, it might not be acceptable to a large majority. For example, I can mention that if we try to do everything based on Tawarruk, a lot of countries, a lot of scholars don't accept Tawarruk. OIC Islamic Fiqh Academy doesn't allow it. Countries like Oman and Jordan and so many countries don't allow these products. So we need to understand that standardization needs bringing things to the best model, best harmonized model, which is acceptable to all. So this is, again, something very important that we need to understand, that what is expected from the standardization bodies, that they need to bring the things in a normal scenario. The structures that we are talking about are not prevalent in every country. Some countries you will find that those structures will not be acceptable at all, even before AOFI's Sharia standard coming in. So this is also something that we need to understand in the background. Then I would say that we need to understand one of the biggest risks that is actually faced by Islamic finance industry is actually the reputation risk. Every now and then you will find people saying Islamic finance is not really Islamic. It is just mimicking the conventional and all that. And we need to understand that this reputation part is important for the resilient and sound and robust Islamic finance system, which can have the potential for growth beyond boundaries over the years. So we need to think for the future, not only for the current time. We may have some problems because of these issues, but it should not happen on an ongoing basis. We need to find out solutions which can address this reputation risk. And I can tell you, every time when we do our standards on the Sharia side, on the accounting side, on the governance side, this reputation risk is one of the important aspects that we consider. So while a lot of people might not be happy on a stricter rule coming in, but I can tell you that lots and lots of people would be much more happy by having those stricter rules, because this will ensure that Islamic finance reputation will improve, and reputation improvement means that eventually in the longer run it will have a better growth. So now coming to your main question, what Standard 59 is about. Standard 59 is on sale of debt, and it has brought in two major issues. One issue is for the banking industry and one issue is for the sukuk industry. Today, I believe we need to discuss about the sukuk industry, but for the banking industry, I would touch upon the issue quickly. That is the issue of rollover, that a lot of Islamic banks have murabaha and other debt-based transactions where a debt is created, and according to Sharia, rollover is not permissible, and it has been clarified in a lot of our earlier standards as well. Only thing is that this standard has re-emphasized on it and emphasized in a manner that it has provided a short mechanism of doing a rollover if it is necessary as per Sharia. So that mechanism of allowing at least one day time was not there earlier. So I would say that it is actually a relaxation of an earlier rule. It's not a strict rule. But the problem is that people were ignoring what was written in earlier standards about rollover, that rollover is prohibited, and they were doing rollovers. So now this standard is actually providing a little bit of flexibility that a rollover can be acceptable if at least one day gap is there and the amount is kept at the disposal of the customer. Banks are trying to find this solution, and we hope that inshallah they will try to find a better solution here. The second issue with regard to Sharia Standard 59 that I believe we have to discuss more about is about the ratio of tangible assets versus intangible assets. Again, as I mentioned in the beginning, that the Sharia has been always there. So first we need to understand what was written in our earlier standards. There were standard number 17 on sukuk and standard number 21 on financial papers. Standard number 17 was prohibiting any transaction which is based on debt. So if a majority part of debt was there in a sukuk structure, it was anyway prohibited. However, it allowed a 30%, 33%, a one-third limit for the corporations. Now, what has been happening, that people were applying the ratio for the corporations on sukuk also, while Islamic Fiqh Academy and some other scholars were applying stricter ratios. However, what happened, I would say that it was slightly misinterpreted by the market in past, and they were applying, because AOFI was not clarifying this issue very clearly. Now we have clarified this issue very clearly, that maximum ratio has to be 49% for debt, and it cannot increase that ratio. And actually the tangible assets ratio at any time should not go below one third, which means that we are allowing a temporary flexibility. Now, it is the matter of interpretation of the earlier standards as well, because the earlier standards were actually not allowing this thing. They were allowing it for the corporations and for the benefit of listeners and readers, I would say that actually this rule has been relaxed because the corporations actually have other activities. They have an ongoing activity. So we have allowed that where the ongoing activities are there, then this ratio will actually not apply. So it is actually a relaxed rule. However, with regard to Sukuk, because they are not an ongoing activity, they are not corporations, they are virtual entities, but they are comprising of assets. They are not having an ongoing continuing activity. So because of not having ongoing continuing activity and not having a continuing activity has goodwill, it has employees, it has lot of other intangibles and unseen things which are part of that logo or name of the corporation. So for the corporation, you can provide these flexibilities because they, even if they have debt on their balance sheet, they are not dealing in debt. Primarily, their business is something else which generates debt. For example, I'm a trading company and I purchase and sell inventory. I do this whole activity, but at the end, I have a debt on my balance sheet as a receivable from my customer. So these corporations, actually, the ratio was primarily for the corporations, and now it has further been relaxed that the ratio is even not required for this if they are actually having ongoing activities and turnover. While on the other hand, the matter related to Sukuk has been clarified. Here we also need to understand that most of these Sukuk, the debt part is based on Tawarruk. Organized Tawarruk has been prohibited by Islamic Fiqh Academy and is not acceptable by a number of countries and a number of scholars around the globe. Even the experts on Islamic finance, other than scholars, believe that Tawarruk is not the real form of Islamic finance. It's a stopgap arrangement. It's a temporary solution, but it's not a permanent solution to be utilized by the Islamic finance institutions. And actually, you will see the same thing in our Tawarruk standard, Sharia standard number 30. Standard number 30 says that Tawarruk should not be used as a common tool, and the model of Tawarruk, where there must be four parties and there must be an open transaction in the market, this we have seen in practicality is not being applied. So even the standard of standard number 30 of on Tawarruk, its application around the globe is the level of compliance is actually questionable. We have seen some regulators actually taking action on that part and asking the market participants that whether they are actually working on this properly, are they complying with it or not. And irrespective of anything, the standard says that it should not be used as a common tool. So we need to understand that it's not only about one standard coming in and doing this all. Actually, this might be the first time that we have clarified and people have tried to listen to it. So now what is actually the impact? The impact is that those structures which are based on Tawarruk, where tangible assets were not the primary return generator for the Sukuk, rather the Tawarruk transaction was the original return generator for those Sukuk. This structure, according to the new ratios that have been clarified, I won't say that AOFI have set that ratios, rather AOFI has clarified and interpreted Sharia on that part, while majority of the scholars who were evaluating these things were already questioning these type of Sukuk in different markets. Again, as I mentioned, we need to have a sound, resilient and robust Islamic finance ecosystem. We cannot have products that on a majority basis, yes, on a need basis, there can be products which are less acceptable, but this should be used in case of need. This should not be the prime source of Islamic finance structuring. So with that, I would say that in a nutshell, what we have done, we believe is going to bring better uniformity, harmonization in the system. It will bring better structuring. It will bring in a lot of innovation in Islamic finance. It will bring Islamic finance transactions closer to the real needs of Islamic finance. And I would say that this might be a little bit hurdle as of this time, but actually we hope that it will bring a better future and better growth for Islamic finance.
Absolutely. So I understand, completely understand the fact that as a standard setting body, we do have to accommodate more of the stricter rules. And as you mentioned, this is like a growing point for the industry to move forward. So our curiosity, how many countries have actually adopted this standard?
Full adoption of Sharia standards is in 19 regulatory jurisdictions in 16 countries. Four regulatory authorities have adopted in three countries on a partial basis. Nine regulators in nine countries have adopted them as guidance or reference material. There are local standards based on AOFI standards in two countries by two regulators. One country actually has a guidance and local standard both based on Sharia in one country. So we are talking about total 35 regulatory jurisdictions that are in actually 31 countries that adopt our standards. But that is the level of regulatory compliance. With regard to the voluntary and optional compliance, you will find a lot more countries than that. Like, for example, some countries that do not adopt our standards in the Europe or in non-Muslim majority countries, you will find that is still the Sharia boards and the scholars are adopting them for their own decision making, and individual Islamic financial institutions or other institutions who are offering Islamic finance services have adopted them on a voluntary basis. So actually, I would say that although there are some major Islamic finance markets that have not adopted our standards, but generally speaking, the impact of these standards go around the globe.
So let's now go into how this standard has impacted the sukuk landscape. So according to, you know, S&P data, total offerings for the first half of 2021 out of the UAE who has adopted this standard is only at 500 million compared to 5.2 billion for the same period last year. There have been comments that with this standard, structuring sukuk has become a lot more difficult, and that this is one of the reasons for the drastic fall in sukuk offerings out of the UAE. What are your thoughts on that?
I think 6 months' time is not a sufficient time to actually determine the complete trends, because we know it for sure that whenever something new comes in, it actually impacts the market a little bit, and actually people have to go through the regulations. They have to actually restructure the things, develop the newer structures. So it comes as an impact of any of the new regulation, any important new regulation, any important new standard. So these issues are there. What we need to see, actually, I would say, as again, I would reemphasize that 6 months are not sufficient to understand this thing. First, we need to see that whether this is a permanent impact or a temporary thing. If it is a temporary thing, and we hope that it's going to be a temporary thing, and there will be better and improved structures coming in, and eventually there will be better confidence of stakeholders on the market, of on the sukuk market and Islamic finance market. So inshallah, in the mid to long run, it will actually improve. We are quite hopeful on that. However, if it is going to continue like this, then we need to not ask AOFI to revise the standard. We need to ask ourselves what we were doing in the name of Islamic finance. Sorry to say, it is the other way around. So if it is a temporary trend and people are able to find out better solutions and they are able to bring the sukuk industry back on its foot, inshallah, and we are hopeful for that, we are quite positive about it. But if you want to go back and see what we were doing in the name of Islamic finance, that is not acceptable. As I said, that there are a lot of questions about this one. It's not only the structure of it. It's not only about the tangible part of the structure. The questions would be about the use of tawarruf also. There will be much more questions about that part. We need to understand that these things actually are brought in for the broader benefit, for the greater benefit of the industry and its stakeholders. Sukuk itself has to be about some benefits, some usufruct, some profits coming out of the assets beneath it. Sukuk is not actually about having a debt transaction like a conventional bond and just mimicking the structure in a manner that it provides you the expected result without actually understanding what sukuk is all about. So you may feel that my views are a bit harsh here, but I would say stick to 2 points. Number one, 6 months is not a big period. Let's see how it actually goes on, how the industry responds to it. The new structures may take time. You know, the legal, the rating agencies, the Sharia, all of them have to go through the newer structures. And this is my understanding, and based on some of my discussion with some market experts, that the people are right now working hard on the newer structures. So I believe that the total Sukuk issuance parts will be there. Just one mentioning, I would say that last year, the COVID was starting. A lot of Sukuk issuances were already in place. This year, we cannot say what is the real impact of the COVID and the downturn in the economy as well on that. All the economies around the globe for last year have been down. So maybe a lot of Sukuk issuances were already in planning in the last year. And when you have a Sukuk, it doesn't happen in one day. Actually, you plan for a few months. So maybe the data we are evaluating for last year might not exactly be the same. I was talking to a friend in a regulatory authority in UAE, and he mentioned that this data is not 100% correct, but it needs to be like investigated more. And he was hopeful that a lot of new structures are coming in. So maybe 1 or 2 years down the line, if we feel that it has a permanent damage or permanent dent on the issuance and the total size of the Sukuk market, different solutions may be found. I believe that international standard setting bodies other than UFI are also working. IAFM has also developed some Sukuk structures which are available to the market. There are a lot of other structures in those countries who are not actually allowing tawarruk to be like a fundamental part of the Sukuk structures. So the markets can learn from each other. Because this structure, as I mentioned, although it's a very popular structure in some of the countries, but in some of the countries you will feel that it does not exist at all, even before EOFI's standard coming in, because the scholars and the regulators in those countries were not liking it. I would like to also mention that we have been working on comprehensive Sukuk project, which includes a Sharia standard, which will shortly be coming in. We have developed a governance standard, and we have yet to see its level of implementation. We have developed three accounting standards. One is the revised standard for the investors, and one is for the financial reporting for Sukuk holder, which is a completely new concept. And one is for the financial reporting for the originator or the issuer, which will be finalized. We have issued the exposure draft of it, which is available, but the final is pending finalization of the Sukuk Sharia standard as well. We are working on a Sharia compliance and fiduciary rating standard as well, because a lot of rating agencies working as of now look at the credit rating element of the Sukuk structures only, while Sukuk is not only about credit. Sukuk actually is about a broader structure, not about credit only. It has the assets at the back end. It has underlying operations at time. So there are multiple elements as well as the Sharia compliance element in those Sukuk. So we are coming up with that standard also on Sharia compliance and fiduciary rating for Islamic finance instruments. It will be for all instruments, but we can understand that major part of the instruments will be Sukuk here. So we are working at our part, and we believe that together all these standards in multiple areas will provide a better and a more, I would say, more Sharia compliant and more robust and resilient mechanism, inshallah.
Definitely, we do need more time to see to ascertain the impact of the standard. It's pretty much not like wait and see how the industry will react. So for those who potentially still have concerns over the potentially adverse impact of this standard, how do you think we as an industry should address these concerns?
Let's ask them to consider one question for themselves. Is Sukuk a mimicking of bond only? They will find the answer to this question themselves. If we believe that the bonds are not permissible and we want to mimic Sukuk in a structure that actually becomes a bond-like instrument rather than by being an actual instrument based on assets, what is the actual difference left? This is some question that they need to ask themselves. If we are thinking of requesting EOFI to reconsider and EOFI Sharia board. Let me tell you one thing. At EOFI, we have three standard setting boards, and each one of these boards is completely independent. Our secretariat or our board of trustees cannot influence, even if we consider the things otherwise, we cannot influence any of our technical standard setting board to change a decision. However, if this thing continues for a longer period, and if it does not, we in the industry is not able to find better solutions, which are already there in other countries, but they are still not able to find those, then and it impacts the markets significantly over medium term. I won't say long term, over medium term also, we will actually submit this point to Sharia board. We will request them if they can provide a temporary relaxation or anything, if there is a room, we can request them. But I think this has to, even if we want to do it, and even if this needs to be done, it needs a proper time to be evaluated and seen. And I would again mention and request that it is not only about one or two markets. I mentioned a lot of countries, and as of now, we received official complaints and comments from two places only. One is the UAE with regard to the Sukuk issues, and one is from Bahrain with regard to the banking system rollover issues. So, yes, we believe it is something strict, but I believe that majority actually understands that it is for the greater benefit. But again, as I mentioned, if this trend continues and it is going to be a long, medium to long-term effect hampering the growth of Islamic finance and Sukuk, we will submit this issue to our Sharia board and will request them to consider if there is any relaxation possible. But as I mentioned, it is actually a clarification of Sharia rules, which are always there. It's not actually that Sharia board made some rules. So again, this is a difficult decision. But let's see if the market goes like this and if the market is not able to find solutions. And just one last thing I would say, that while UAE is one of the biggest markets that adopts our standards, and we highly respect that, we believe that the UAE Central Bank Sharia Board has also taken the same views as of now. That is our reading and understanding. So it's not about the market only. You need to see the experts also. The experts and the scholars, whether the experts and scholars of the UAE Central Bank have actually opposed this view of EOFI. This would be more alarming for us. If the scholars take a view against EOFI's view, then it will be an alarming situation for us, and we'll submit to the board that a lot of scholars around the globe are taking a view which is against your view. But if it is not about the scholars and it's about other experts in other fields, then I would better prefer that these experts should be trying to find solutions and should not try to redefine the Sharia rules. Leave the definition of rules part to those who are experts in Sharia. And these experts should be doing their part. That is, within the rules, finding out new and better solutions, inshallah.
If I could ask one more last question, because from our discussion today, I think for me, one thing that I've taken away from what you have shared is that there is flexibility when it comes to accommodating structures, so on and so forth, depending on the maturity of the market. You did mention that Tawarruk is just merely a stopgap measure based on need. In your opinion, do you think we as an industry is mature enough to say really goodbye to Tawarruk and, you know, introduce new structures? Are we there yet?
This is actually a different, thought process for different people. Oman did not start with Tawarruk, and they did not allow Tawarruk till now. Oman is one of the fastest growing markets. Bangladesh does not have Tawarruk. They are 27%. The Bangladesh does not have any significant government level support or a significant central bank level support. The 27 or 28% of the market is Islamic. Jordan, The third largest bank, which is the largest private bank, is Islamic. There is no Tawarruk. So if we believe that Tawarruk is the key to growth, I believe it is wrong. It is a wrong understanding. Tawarruk is something for the need basis. And yes, we believe that Tawarruk is not haram if all the Sharia principles related to Tawarruk are followed. But if you try to put Tawarruk as the key product of Islamic finance, actually it has the potential to kill all of the Islamic finance products. Because one time you develop a system and then comparatively it's like conventional. And our lot of bankers and lot of financial institutions, they actually have not been able to actually innovate. Unfortunately, I have this argument every time with our friends in Islamic finance industry that innovation is not about copying a new conventional product into your regime. Innovation is about coming up with a new genuine model, genuine transaction. It's not about just copying others. But Tawarruk has the potential of copying almost all the conventional products. So Tawarruk actually kills innovation, I believe, and Tawarruk kills the objective of Islamic finance as well. But at the same time, Tawarruk, when complying with all the Sharia principles and rules, and we are afraid that this is not actually happening because a real four-party transaction happening in the real market is not a common thing. Majority of the transactions that we have seen do not fulfill complete criteria of AOFI Sharia standard in that respect as well. So I'm not saying Tawarruk is haram. I'm just saying two things. Number one, Tawarruk as a common product is not good. Number two, Tawarruk as prevalent in the market does not comply with our Sharia standards requirements completely. And number three, Tawarruk kills innovation because it is comparatively easy to execute. And after that, you actually don't have any appetite for coming up with the innovation. It's not only the maturity issue, because as I mentioned, Oman started without that. So we need to understand that part, that Oman can start it without Tawarruk, and a lot of countries can do it without Tawarruk even when they were in infancy stage. So it was actually acceptable. However, I believe that in some of the Islamic finance markets, it's now 30 to 40 years old, and those countries, regulators, Islamic finance institutions, decision makers, they should start thinking not only about Tawarruk, but about the actual real direction of Islamic finance as to how we want to take it. And I believe that our Islamic finance markets are normally underbanked or unbanked. They have huge potential on the asset side. They have huge potential on the liability side. They have huge potential to grow. They have huge potential to let their countries grow and help their countries have a sustainable growth over a period of time. We believe that Islamic finance has a much greater role to play than what it is playing today. And for that, our decision makers, our regulators, our institutional governance teams, they have to actually think about the direction. But I don't think that we need to impose anything on that. Whatever is there in the Sharia standard number 30 as of now, if people read it properly, it is actually providing enough room for the Tawarruk transaction based on need, but it is not providing any room for Tawarruk transaction being the norm of Islamic finance or being the leading product of Islamic finance.
Thank you so much, Omar, for sharing your thoughts. It's been really insightful and enlightening for us.
Real pleasure. And again, I would like to thank you and the team of IFN for providing this opportunity. And we hope that together the bodies related to standard setting and the institutions related to media can help develop the industry on the right direction, can help provide the thought leadership for the industry, inshallah, for the time to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more discussions on the Islamic finance industry, log on to www.islamicfinancenews.com. You can also listen to IFN Podcast on your favorite platforms, including iTunes and Spotify.